I'm Emily Theed, author of This Vicious Grace, coming in summer 2022 from Wednesday Books.
And I'm Anna, a teacher and a writer in the Queery Trenches.
And you're listening to Basic Pitches, where we...
Two basic pitches.
Break down the basics of writing and being a writer.
Nice.
It's like the part of the podcast where, like, in your draft, you write, put banter here, you know?
Oh,
but,
yeah.
But you can never... Brackets. Make yourself write banter. You have to wait. Like, it's going to hit you at 3 o'clock in the morning when you're like, hit, that's
yeah.
funny. Yeah.
That was like the biggest, this is it. This is our intro. That was the biggest help and hurt of my writing was when I learned you can just throw shit in brackets and
write cool fight scene here. Yeah. I'm getting to the point, I think, where I like, I have too many brackets and some of them are really big brackets. You know, they're like, write entire training montage here. Like, this has been my new mantra is whenever when I watch movies, whenever they have like a like the team comes together montage or like the team prepares for this thing montage or like the they fall in love montage, I like shake my fist at the TV and I'm like, why don't I get a montage?
Right?
Because I'm at the point in my sequel where that's what I need. I need a montage. I need 8 minutes, the equivalent in a book, of like, here they are doing the thing. Isn't it funny? Look at these cute little non sequitur moments. Ha 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 ha. And we're done. And you can't do that in a book. So instead I have this like 60 to 70% of the book where I'm like, how I write a montage. Like, I just need to get that they're here and I need to get them here and the actual specifics of it. You know what I mean? Like, you could just do like,
yes,
there they are fighting, there they are laughing, there they are this, like, but that doesn't work in a book. So I'm like,
that doesn't exist.
Yeah, so I just keep doing brackets, like, the team comes together, funny stuff happens, is a party,
right.
But like, I don't know what happens in those scenes. So,
I
yes,
totally understand
here. Yep,
I tried fast drafting a book one time with the bracket thing, and I got like through act one and I was like, we can't keep doing this. I don't know what's going on here. This is nothing. And I had to go back and fix it. So people who can do that, I'm like,
well, I
more
think
power to you.
I'm realizing for me that so much of my fast drafting, because it's now been a while, I don't think I can call myself a fast drafter anymore, because the last book I fast drafted was This Vicious Grace. And that was in early 2019. And the only reason I think I could do it was because I wasn't writing to a structure. See, we're going to say it's going to segue perfectly here. I wasn't writing to a structure. Like, I knew I needed an inciting incident. I knew all that. But the rest of it, I was just running. So there wasn't brackets. It was just, here's a fun scene. Here's another fun scene. And like, I didn't even try to figure out what the brackets were. It was just like, I'll come back later and figure out where everything goes, you know? And like, the thing that I thought was going to be the darkest moment was actually the midpoint and like all this stuff. And so... Now this is the first time where I have such a, like, a deeper understanding of story structure. So now I know when I'm skipping stuff, and I think that's what I'm running into. You know what
Isn't
I mean?
That the
like,
fun.
Yeah.
That's the thing I never understood when I first started writing. There was, maybe it was Neil Gaiman, but everybody says it. But the idea that, oh, I think it was Neil Gaiman, because he was talking about how, like, when kids write stories – those are sometimes the best stories because they don't know anything about story structure rules. And he's like, the more you learn about something,
the more you know, the harder it gets.
The harder it gets. Because you're like, I know the reason why I'm stuck here is because this isn't fully fleshed out. So I need to go back. But I also don't know the answer to that question.
I keep chopping up all my scenes and being like, no, I'm not sure the mood is right. Which should the mood be at this point in the book? Well, if the mood was this and it's going to be this, but I already wrote this and that's not the right. Maybe I'll move that there. No, that doesn't work because it's not. I'm like, oh. Whereas I used to just like chase the story. It's also why for me, it's actually why outlining first, I think, hurts me. Because now that I know some people need to know where they're going. Now that I know where I'm going, it's almost like, it's like someone laid out some stepping stones, but they're all way too far apart. And instead of just swimming, I'm like trying to hurl myself from one to the next and I just keep like banging into them. And so like when I used to just swim, I would just paddle and see what happened. And then I would be like, oh, look, I found a new plot beat. Whereas now I'm just like, I gotta get there. I can't. It's too far away. And I'm like forgetting that you can swim through the water. I'm like trying to make the jump. So,
I get that. I get that.
The signposts are too, like, I can't read them. I don't have my glasses on. Like, I'm like, I know there's a signpost up there, and I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but I'm sitting there squinting at it instead of just, like, going towards it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think it almost sounds like whenever I would, like, outline ridiculously so, I would want to go swimming, and I would want to, like, see something over there and be like, ooh, what is that? Let's go try. I would be like, no, we have to get to this next thing. But the next thing didn't feel right. The next thing felt, you know, and like you said, it could be just a tonal thing that it was like tonally, I went into this with this being a romantic scene. And actually, it's a horror scene. Like, I don't know. There's something, I guess that's the art, right? Like, that's the art of writing is when you kind of see these nuances and you have to kind of maneuver around them and figure out, okay, it doesn't feel right. Why does it feel right? Let's go back. Let's figure it out. How do I make it feel right?
You, that's like we came at it from opposite ends and like met in the middle because you started at a place where you were like, I am going to lay out all my stepping stones and then maybe sometimes you missed your chance to swim around a little bit. Whereas I was like swimming and riding the waves and like having a lot of fun with the vibes and like I got that sort of like the up and the down and like you get a win, you get a loss. Like that stuff I got. But then I had to go back and, like, do a lot of rearranging to get it to actually, like, hit the beats right and, like, fix the pacing and stuff. But it was like, yeah, I like this metaphor. You had all the stepping stones perfectly, but you forgot to enjoy the water. And I was enjoying the water and was like, oh, no. No one else can follow this because I forgot to put out the stepping stones. Right. And now that we both know, like, oh, you got to enjoy the water, but you also need stepping stones. It's like, oh, now we're trying to do two things at once. We're trying to swim while building stepping stones. And that is a lot.
Right.
And I'm convinced if I download enough beat sheets, one of them will tell me what to do. And I probably, just need to get back in the water is what I need to do. Because,
I talked so to far, someone. Yeah, no, I totally feel you. I've actually been thinking a lot because I've started a new project. And I'm really spending time getting to know the characters and getting to know the world. And I'm making a pitch deck. And I'm sorry, I got very distracted for a second because the sun is coming in through my window and I was looking at my hair and I was like, is this it? Is this it? Am I developing my rogue gray strand? I got real excited. No, it's just the light hitting my hair perfectly. One day. Anyway.
I'll give you some of mine.
Please, I will take – I've developed so many. I looked in the mirror the other day and I was like, all of these are called pitch wars.
Yeah. Oh, my family – like my family, we all start getting grays when we're like 20. Yeah. So we really are the classic. So if you ever read Anne McCaffrey's book, she has a whole series. There's a one woman that has all white hair and then her daughter has the rogue streak.
Yes.
So I was like, somewhere in between.
Give me it.
Detour.
Detour. Okay, back. I was talking to a friend recently, and I think I have a working theory that for me, starting a project, and we talked about it on a previous episode about going through the door, right? Mm-hmm. I can go through the door and start my draft. I can start swimming or I can start jumping stones when I have one of three things, and I think it's a triangle for people. You can have two of them, two of the three pieces of the triangle. You can have character and vibes, or you can have plot and vibes, or you can have plot and character, and then you can start and you can revise and you can find out the other two along the way.
I like that.
And I don't know. I've become such a character-driven writer that
makes me so happy.
I know. Even starting this new book, I was like, this doesn't feel right. I don't have a plot. And then I started, I was like, okay, let's just go have fun making a character. And we're going to learn their wants, their needs, their desires, their whatever. And if I couldn't come up with an answer, I just started playing around with it. And then slowly I started realizing there's a plot there. And I was like, okay, so if I can do characters and vibes, I'm going to figure out a plot eventually. That's fun.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that holds merit. But
I absolutely think it does. Yeah. And I think I'm in a tough spot because I have like a little bit of all of them, but not all of all
go
of
hard.
Any of them.
You go know? Hard like, on two of them.
I know. Well, the thing is, I already know the characters so well from book one, but it's very different to do character arcs when you've already done that. It's just, it's different.
Yeah.
It's different, you know. I knew them in first in book one and I have to get to know them again. Yeah. And
Yeah,
it's just – it's a different starting spot. I think there are just – yeah, we'll do an episode someday about sequels if I ever figure out how to finish one. But there's just there are significant differences in how you do arcs. And I was talking to a couple people, actually, editor siblings and stuff, about how, like, there aren't books on writing a sequel. No one tells you how to write it. And so just when you start to figure out how you're supposed to do this, but you start with a character who is A and they're going to become Z at the end of it, and then it's like, ooh, but now you got them back or you don't, depending on spoilers, and then how do you – it's just – it's going to be a different process because a story is supposed to be somewhat self-contained. And some people solve that problem by writing two or three books where, like, the character doesn't complete their arc, but that's often where you run into people complaining that, like, you know, book one felt like half a book. You know, like, it didn't feel like it was a complete story. And when I wrote, and I'm not saying that's bad or good, but when I wrote This Vicious Grace, originally it was supposed to be a standalone. And then we opened a door for a duology. But even when we went on sub, we didn't say specifically this has to be a duology. It was like, we would like it to be, which means that I took my main character a lot farther than maybe some people would if they had known they were going to have two books. But that's how I wanted that book to be. But now I have to rework things to make a equally satisfying second book, which is why I have my Save the Cat Writes a Novel that I have been practically sleeping pillow. Yes, I have it because I've been using the beat sheets forever. But yeah,
I was gonna say I've only ever seen the beat sheets. Can you talk about like what's going on in that book?
True story. I haven't read it all yet, but I've been flipping through it. It does a really great job of explaining the different parts, you know, because I know, at least for me, the first time that I found beat sheets, I was like, I don't know what any of this means. And even when I started to understand it, I was like, okay, in theory, I get it. Like, something has to happen, and then they're going to think about it, and then they're going to make a choice, and it's not going to work so great or whatever. But even, like, the first time I tried to really write to story beats, it all didn't work. And as I've mentioned plenty of times in this podcast, I often realize, like, oh, that thing that I thought was the worst thing ever that was going to be the darkest moment is not. It is the midpoint, or it is the, you know, break into act two. And so it's been a long time of me just looking stuff up and reading different resources to try to really understand those beats. And I've talked up also before about how I watch movies and try to do that. But the book does, you know, it breaks it down and explains to you, like, why this is the part of the book where your character, you know, you're seeing their flaws, and this is the part of the book where, like, they have to change, and this is the part of the story where they think they've changed, but they haven't, and, like, that kind of stuff. And it talks about all the different genres, which are not the genres that we discuss. You know, like, it's got examples of, like, rites of passage, superhero, dude with a problem, buddy love, like that kind of stuff, and breaks down different types of stories that aren't what we consider bookstore genres, but are like kind of the heart of the story. So
That's something interesting that I've been looking at too. I had a conversation with Lauren about coming up with ideas, and I was like, how? I don't understand. I usually write one idea and then I panic for about a week.
Yep.
Like, I don't have an idea. And then suddenly there's an idea. And it's always been there. Like, it's always been in the back of my head.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do people come up? Because she was talking about coming up with all these, like, different ideas. And a couple other people at that time were at idea generation time. And I kind of went, okay, hold up. How do you do this? And one of her suggestions was to look at, like, tropes and romantic tropes or tropes, you know, big story tropes, that kind of thing, and then go from there and say, I want to write a story with this trope. How do I do it with my own spin? So what are some things that I'm interested in that do that? And that seems to be doing it as well with that book as examples, is here's an archetype or that kind of thing. And then you can go from there to build your own story, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, because I think for me, I usually start with – it's a character dynamic. It's almost always a character dynamic for me. And a lot of times it starts from a movie and it's like has nothing to do with the plot of the movie. There's like some scene or some pivotal moment. A lot of times there is a romantic element, but that's not always. But it's just something about it that just sticks with me and it just runs over in my head. And I'll go back and watch that scene over and over again and wait to figure out what it is that is catching me. And then I build an entire story around it once I figure out what that kind of is. But yeah, I think you're right. I think those genres, that's what it's really about. Like, Dude with a Problem is a story about someone who, like, has a problem versus the, you know, Buddy Love is, like, the transformative power of love and friendship. Like, I think a lot of my books probably have that. Even if it's a romance, it's the, like, these, how are these two people going to change each other and change their lives and all that stuff. So, yeah. Figuring, it's like finding the emotional heart of your story.
For sure. That was my breakthrough like last week. I was working on that pitch deck and there was a character that I just couldn't figure out because I didn't understand how they were going to fit in there. And this time I'm working with three main characters rather than two.
Because you just love a challenge.
Because I love a challenge. but I'm working at three and I couldn't figure out one. They're pivotal, but I couldn't figure out the angle to come with them. And it comes down to that character, that heart of the character, that heart of the story. And once I started really picking into that, I could kind of tell, oh, that doesn't really light me up. Like, that's not exciting. This is exciting, though. Where can I take that? And then by figuring out that the ins and outs of that character, it really helped with plot. And, oh, I can see how where – yeah. Right? Like, it's so fun. Like, this character wants this thing really, really badly, and that's going to totally clash with this character who couldn't give a shit less about that thing. Yeah. And, oh, what if I just make them childhood best friends, and they have to meet each other again? So you, like, force them to come back. Like, I don't know.
I got some of that happening in my sequel, and I'm having a lot of fun with it. But it is – it's a huge challenge to add in another person. But sometimes it is what you need. Like, the more – major players you have in a story, I think the more complex it gets because then you start to have kind of the threads of these two and the threads of these two. And that, like, it's like you said, like that triangle, except this is like the difficult triangle, even if it's not a love triangle. It's just to how do all these characters interact and how do they each kind of get their path? Because they should all grow and change throughout the story, but they can't all be the main emotional beats. They can't have them all. So,
yeah.
Books are fun.
They are fun. And I even think the more you know, I talked about this a little bit today about character wants, and I talked about it on Instagram. And it's something I picked up with Pitch Wars, which is going back to like characters' primal needs. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people talk about how, and I had this problem, that their character has no agency, that their character doesn't make choices, or their character is making choices, but there's still no agency there, right?
Yeah.
And I think what's happening for me right now is the farther back I go to primal instincts with a character, the more I can see the choices this character is going to make with this very specific problem. So does this character want love? Does this character want a variety in life? Does this character want recognition? Does this character want – and then ask, like, where does that come from? And what are they willing to do to get that primal need?
Yeah.
And that has unlocked story for me. I can look at a situation and say, okay, my character only cares about love and getting people's love. And they are willing to do anything to get it. But more importantly, the first thing they're willing to do is sacrifice themselves to get that love. And, okay, well, how can I make them sacrifice more than that? How can I make that a hard choice for them? How can I – and that's like – then you get into this cool thing of plot of like, ooh, this character could force them to make that hard choice because they don't care about love or – I don't know. It's a fun
– it kind of goes with the like – I guess the story genius, even though we all know that I'm not a fan. It's just not what I needed. But again, the reason that I think for me Story Genius wasn't the book that unlocked things was because those were the things – those are the things I started with.
Yeah.
So for me, I was like, but I do that. And now you're telling me I have to do all the other stuff. And I'm like, I love the – what is it? The false – the lie they tell themselves.
Oh,
it's kind of the opposite of, like, what does the character need? Like, sometimes you have characters who know what they need. In this Vicious Grace, Alessa knows what she needs. She knows what she wants. She knows what she needs. They're all tied up together. She wants love and friendship and relationships and connection. And she needs to have all those things and stop killing people so that she can save the world and be happy. Like, it's all wrapped up together. And right now I'm playing with a character who's kind of the opposite, who thinks, I don't need people. Even if I do care, I don't need it. I got this. Like, I don't need to open up. I don't need to share. I don't need to rely on other people. I can do this on my own. And if I can't, I'm never going to reveal it. And so that's what drives every decision. Every decision is based on this self-protective instinct of like, nope, nope, nope. I don't need that. Don't make me have those feelings. Don't make me have this conversation. And
right.
It works just as well from the opposite direction because, again, every decision that this character makes is like, mm-mm, like I've touched that hot fire before and it burned me bad and I'm not touching that fire again.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So.
I like that. I like that.
And I think if you do, I do encourage people to check out Beat Sheets and Save the Cat and Save the Cat Writes a Novel because that's where it starts from is who is your character in the beginning? Who do they have to become? What do they convince themselves at this point? You know, how do they try to reach their goal, but they have not let go of who they are. How are they going to change? Like all of that really drives the plot structure.
For sure. It's funny you say that because I'm pretty sure this will come out after we listen to the Kat Bakewell episode, but she talked about how, she's going to be so upset at me. No, she won't. She's so kind. We talked about how character is the vehicle for which your plot is driven. Like character is the vehicle. That's how it's going to get there. Like that's how your plot's going to be. Sorry, I butchered that. Go back and listen to that episode, everyone. Sorry.
That's right. They don't need to know you butchered it. Just say it again. Nice and smooth.
Hello. This is voiceover, Hannah. No. But yeah, I think that's what it is. And I don't know about you, but like think of – I know your sequel is kind of a different beast, right?
Oh, good. Yeah, let's
look at a fresh project.
Yeah. I have one of those I have to do too.
I know. So let's think about that. Like put yourself in that shoes. Like I'm finding it's hard when you're starting out because you don't know much.
Yep.
But when you do know these things, you've looked at beat sheets, you know character, you know, like you've heard these things, you're trying to practice them.
Yeah.
For me, I'm at that point where, and I don't know if you are, I would love to, like, this is why I'm asking this.
Mm-hmm.
They work together.
Theoretically.
So I do them together. So I figure out a little bit of character.
Mm-hmm.
I figure out a little bit of plot. I'm doing the dance. I don't know if anybody can see it.
I like your dance.
Nobody can see it, but I'm doing it.
Yeah.
So you figure out a little bit of character. And then you're like, oh, dang.
Yeah.
That's my midpoint. Like, I just did that where I was like, ooh, that's going to be a fun midpoint. And then I go fill out a little beat sheet where I'm like, here's my midpoint.
Yeah, I do that all the time. Then I'm like, forget the rest of it. We'll deal with that later. Yeah.
We'll do that later. But that's a cool midpoint. And then I go back and figure out some character. And then I come back and do some outline. Do you foresee – what do you foresee your, like, future project being?
I do. So, agree? Yeah. So I will say this is the – no, that's exactly correct, which is also why – it is a curse and a blessing to be able to sell on proposal, which I have not done yet. I have not done yet, but that is – I've talked to a couple
people about that, and it's like, what? I don't
– Yeah. So if you – I don't know when it will come out, but I recorded an episode with my friend Taylor who wrote a memoir. And this is a thing. We've known each other in person the entire time before we wrote our books and after. And we had like a real – like she was like, I'll be real honest, like – you wrote the book first, and I know that's hard, and I know it's hard to query and get rejected, but, like, at least once it sold, you'd written the book. And I was like, yeah, no, that's correct. Like, it's hard before, but then once you do sell the book, it's a lot easier once you've written it, and because I'm now – because I got the best of both worlds, because with the sequel, and then my option book will be presented on proposal. And that's the thing. If you are someone who figures everything out from the start, selling on proposal is beautiful because you write your first few chapters, you write your detailed outline, and then if they don't want it, you don't waste your time writing it. If you are not someone that can see the entire story until you've written it, it's a different situation. So in a lot of ways, it actually is the same when it comes to my sequel and what will be my option proposal, is that I am trying to reshape my creative process to fit.
Yeah.
And again, like it's a gift to be able to not write a whole book and then find out someone doesn't want it. Like 100%. Like 100%.
For sure.
But it also, like, just because it can save you time and energy doesn't mean that you can just tell your brain to do it differently.
Exactly.
So in a perfect world, I would have time built in, which I would have if I wasn't like a year behind schedule on the sequel. My plan was always to get the sequel done early, have plenty of time before I could present my option proposal and at least rough draft it so that I would have an idea where it was going. And that's not going to happen because SQL is not going to be ready in time. But so I'm kind of trying to like get the back burner going and say, okay, I have this character dynamic. I have this rough kind of pitch. How much of it can I get spinning in my brain? Because that is what I have to do. I have to follow them around. And I have these kind of pivotal scenes, but I wouldn't necessarily say I have a plot. I have pivotal scenes of the romantic arc, because this one, I'm going to be leaning in hard with the fantasy rom-com element. But yeah, it's hard. It's hard when you realize that no matter how much you want to, you can't necessarily reshape your process completely.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's I think reshaping the process is the thing that you are capable of doing. Like you as in everyone, not you specifically, but like people are capable of reshaping their process. It's just having the time and the mental, emotional space, like having that. Yeah. That time, I guess it's that time to play.
Yes.
That is something that I've never appreciated and never used. I've just kind of been stressed. Like, I have to write the next thing. I have to write the next thing. And now I've gotten to the point where it's like, nah, I'm going to take my time and I'm going to have some fun. And that's like a privilege. Like, that's, I get that.
Yeah.
So that's hard.
In the writing world, it's every privilege comes with a downside. like that's what they all are. Because again, it's like I don't want to complain about like, oh, someone might want to see what I have next. It's just like, can we pause the world for a second? Because I need that playtime. I know myself. I need to play with characters before I can present it. So I might be able to fake it till I make it and be like, trust me, I'll get it. But like, it's not necessarily going to be the same story.
Right.
But I don't know yet. So at the moment, I'm just like, hold that thought. It'll be fun.
Right.
Whatever it is. So,
Right.
We'll see.
Wow.
But for once, I have an entire pitch. I have a pitch. Good for me. That's I don't know what happens in the book, but I have a pitch. So,
that's good. That's like a first step of an outline. Like, that's a first step of knowing the project.
Yeah. I always think of the pitch as like act one plus a potential darkest moment. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, to me, that's what a pitch is. The pitch is like, this is what we got. But if it goes wrong, dun-dun-dun-dun, and that's cool. Yeah. But I always kind of start a story with the setup and the what's the worst thing that could happen. It's the rest of it that I gotta fill in. So we will see. But yeah, so is this your – are you still working on your creepy woodsy, creepy Appalachian?
Yeah, yeah.
Things that scare me.
It's going to be exciting. I think it's – it is going to be Appalachian woodsy. It is going to be a little bit scary. It's going to be very romantic.
I feel like I've been such a good influence or bad influence, depending on how you look at it. Because I feel like I've been that devil on your shoulder being like, more and more of the banter. Write it because you do it so well. So I love seeing you embracing it. I feel like we both kind of started at a place where we were like, we like these elements, but like we are not writing them. And then it just kind of like pulls it on in.
You know, I think that's like that's the thing I have allowed myself to do with this last book and this book is to say, you know what, I'm just gonna do it. Like, I'm pretty sure that this one is gonna be adult, and I don't like some people. I don't know, that was a big conversation recently. That's a whole tangent for another episode about writing the two of the same thing so that you have two to sell or whatever. And I'm like, man, I don't even have an agent. So whatever. I have a couple YA books in store. They're in storage.
Yeah.
I can write an adult, whatever.
Totally.
But I was like, I want to try adult. I want to try, dare I say, I am not saying this like I can do it, but we're going to try. We're going to try and write like Aaron Morgenstern, Night Circus.
Go
and
for
Adam
it.
LaRue from V.E. Schwab. We're going to try.
You love those
We're
books?
Try.
Do it. Lean right. in. Lean in. Go
that's,
for it.
And that's the thing. Leaning in. I don't know. I think, leaning in and plot. Going back to that, you said something that's very interesting, which is watching a movie or TV show and there's a scene that sticks with you and you just replay it and replay it and replay it. I do the same thing with music. I do the same thing with pictures. I do the same thing with TV shows and movies. And like you said, I think it was just really such a poignant thing that I wanted to spend some time talking about it because it's so on, like it's so good. It's a good piece of advice because you can find that little tick, that little thing, and truthfully write a story around that. I've seen so many tweets where people are like, I wanted to have this scene in a book somewhere, so I wrote it. And there, like, the example I can give is the TV show Arcane, which if Lindsay is listening to this, you knew I was going to talk about it. but the scene, there's two scenes in Arcane that one of the ending scenes that's very heartbreaking, and I won't say, but it has to do with a villain. And if people have seen it, they know. If you know, you know. And I was like, that right there, boop. It's that adopted daughter, like, kind of grumpy old man, but like with a villain twist.
Man, I love a grumpy old man and an adopted child. Gosh darn it.
That scene, and I was like, I'm going to write a scene that's like that one day. And I picked it out and I watched it over and over and over again. And then there's a scene with one of the sisters, like kind of sending out this flare for her sister, kind of like at this like crossroads moment. Mm-hmm. And it's so dramatic and it is so heartbreaking. It is so just gut-wrenching that I just watched it again and again and again and again. And I was like, we're going to do that one day. And
it's planting a seed. Like, you can feel a little seed. It's just sitting there and you're like, yes. You got
to
water it.
Oh my gosh. And that can help plot because you have to think, okay, how do I get there? Mm-hmm. How did they get there? What did they do? And what can I do with this totally new story? Like, I don't know. It's so cool to say, this is a plot beat I want to hit.
Yeah. And it's also why I tell people, like, when you're stuck and you can't figure out what to write, just, like, consume as much media as possible because you never know. Like, you never know what moment. I mean, there's a moment in an Italian Bromsad movie that it's exact what I always do is there's a moment and I'm like, no, wait. Oh, they didn't do the thing. They didn't do the next thing I wanted to see. And my brain is like, but what if? And I just start composing it. Now, the problem with this one is the scenes that keep writing themselves in my head don't work in a fantasy setting. Like, they have to be contemporary. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing that. I have to write a fantasy. So it's like, can I figure out how to adjust that? And it will have nothing to do with the actual thing that inspired it. It's just this moment. Oh, sometimes it's like the look on a character's face when you're like, oh, I see the world. Like, I see the internal world that the actor was creating. But then I never got to chase it down. So, like, I want to write a story about that moment. And but sometimes I'll go, like, I mean, last night I had a night where it's March Madness time in the Theed household. So there's basketball on one floor and I am not on a different floor.
For all our basketball fans.
Good for you. I apologize for you. I'm not watching
But dang, I'm glad my dad didn't get into that when I was a kid.
But it means that every March I watch whatever I want. With no limitations because there's no obligation to watch something with anyone else. So like last night I finished watching an episode of the thing I was watching and I was just in that point where I was like, I need to put things in the garden of my brain. And so I was just pulling up movies and TV shows and just finding all of those moments, like all of those scenes that I was like, I love this scene. I'm going to watch that three times. I love this scene in this movie. And I was just finding them, and it was just like I was just gathering them up and being like, look at all these things that make you want to tell a story.
Yes.
Stick them all in your brain, because you need ideas soon. And they are not applicable to my sequel, because I have the seeds for that one, which was great. Like, I needed to be like, ooh, look, garden, here you go, here are your seeds, I'll be back soon. Just to kind of remind myself that there are these little seeds of ideas. So,
Are you ready for my nerdy?
Heck, very nerdy. Love a nerdy
hack for that kind of like finding all those scenes and finding all those things that you love.
Tell me.
Go on YouTube and search something you love. So like, let's take Roy Kent and Geely.
Oh, I do this. You find the fan and videos? Look up
fan made videos. I'm like, there was I haven't even finished Vampire Diaries, but I love Damon and Elena so much that I'm
I love it. It's because the person
I went on there and I was like, Damon and Elena fan videos.
Yeah, well, it's because the people creating them tapped into the same thing.
They get it.
And they add the music, they add the vibe. And a lot of times it's like a minute and a half of just like vibes and like a couple moments from scenes. And you're like, I just needed to keep like just hit me with it again and again. Oh, yes. That's for all of our baby fans out there, if anyone else is watching Baby with Sophie and me, with this Italian, it's a show. There's a toxic relationship, but there's something there. I don't like writing toxic relationships. I like it when both characters are decent people underneath, but there's something about this. And yes, half of my YouTube search function is just Ludo and Fiore. Ludo and Fiore. Because I'm like, what is it? I'm trying to figure out what it is that I'm trying. Like, there's, I have a half a seed, and I need to figure out what it is. And again, by the time it turns into a story, it will be nothing like the original characters, but it's just, what is it about this tragic where you're like, oh, this is not good for either of you, but how?
For sure.
Yeah.
It's the same thing with villains. Like, when you find a villain, you're like, I love a villain. Does that mean I love the bad things they do?
Yeah. But it's just, maybe? No. I don't know. I think for me, it's always like the heart of like the thing underneath. Like, there's like the outer, the top level story, and then there's just something underneath, and I'm trying to figure out what it is underneath. Exactly. So.
Usually for me, it's the psychology element. And then I'm like, how do I write that? How do I get that in my story?
Which, again, is why I think, you know, when we talk about plot structure, I think so many people think of that as dry and formulaic. Yes. And I'm like, no, it's not. It doesn't have to be. It's just helping you shape it. So that you can see the fact that, like, your character is going to grow and change. How do you get them from point A to point B? They have to follow the – there are certain steps that have to happen. And, like, psychologically, that makes sense. People don't go from being one thing to overcoming their mental hurdles just in the blink of an eye. And it feels inauthentic if you try to make them do it.
Right.
And I think we often think of, like, there's, like, a darkest moment and, like, then they change. But no. Like, you have to get them there. They have to be in a place where they can change. Which, and that's the –
You're right. Yeah, it's story structure. Story structure is there for a reason. It is sort of like grammar that once you know it, you can play with it and you can break it a little, but it's there because it works.
Yeah.
And you just got to find the structure or the wording of the structure that works for you. That was like, and that's something else that I've been thinking about too, is the way things are worded. A lot of beat sheets are the exact same beat sheet, just the words, the way they describe the things are just a little bit different. It was just like when I was teaching, I had somebody who would come in and help teach for a period. And every now and then when I couldn't, when I was saying something or a student couldn't understand, they were like, I still don't quite get it. I would just step aside and let her teach it. And it would click with that student because she said a phrase or she put it in a way that I couldn't and didn't, my brain didn't think that way. And it's the same thing with beat sheets. You just kind of go and find the ones that work with you. And if they don't work for you, start cobbling them together.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Start, like, just say, determined. Gonna, because I love you gave me the 27 chapter outline. And that was so helpful for me in some ways. But numerically, it does not work.
No, it doesn't.
And so I'm like constantly, like I have the big piece of paper, which I also owe to you. Like, get the big piece of paper, Emily. And I always says, get the big piece of paper. It's time to get the big piece of paper.
I am on the poster board over there. Yep. And here's my new piece of paper. Sorry. Here's my new piece of paper. Do you see these note cards? Ooh. The wall is my paper.
Well, I don't know if you have listened to the episode I recorded with Taylor, but her husband, who is an angel, painted a wall in their house with whiteboard paint. I know. That was my reaction, too. And I was like, I always knew Paul was an angel, but now I know it for truth. Ah, a whiteboard wall.
Whiteboard. How did...
I know.
It's I'm going to go to Stephen after this and be like, so...
Husbands who love their partners make a whiteboard wall. Yes, I am cutting up note cards. I got post-its. I'm moving stuff everywhere because I'm trying to be the red string guy. I need to see this stuff. I keep printing out certain acts of my book in the tiniest font possible and chopping up the papers to move them around because I can't, like, I need to see the whole thing to be able to see. Because I think the problem that I run into with beat sheets and stuff is that, again, I understand what it means. But when I shape character arcs, I am following the character in a way that is organic, and I am not ashamed of that, but I still have to, like, the reader has to understand each beat. So it's almost like I need to follow them on this. They're going up the hill, they're going down the hill, they're going up and down. But then it's like, all right, when I'm writing the story, I need to cue the reader in. Like, this is a moment where something shifts. This is a moment where something shifts. And so I need to find those signposts. Yeah. And sometimes I need to, like, step back and look at more of it at once.
Totally because, get that. Yeah.
That's a lot.
That is a lot. I totally get that. That's, I don't know. I feel the same way when I finish writing a book and I go to do the reverse outline. Like I go to, yeah. This is so bad. I read my Pitch Wars book so many times, so many times. And I can tell you the big beats mm-hmm. and I know everything that happens in that book. But even when I read it that last time, I was like, this yeah. connects to this, uh-huh. which causes this. This is a reflection of this. Uh-huh. I'm really smart.
Oh, girl.
And like,
this is going to be
I don't know what's in that book.
Most arrogant thing I will ever say is as I stare into the abyss of sequel writing, I keep pulling out This Vicious Grace and being like, what did I do? How did I do it? I went through, I pulled up my old Scrivener file and I wrote a list with the word count of every single scene. And I tried to find the emotional heart of every single scene in that book because this is the arrogant part. I worked really hard on that book and I'm really proud of it. And I feel like I knocked a couple things out of the park. And now I'm like, how did I do it? And how do I recreate it? And with a duology, I am committed to having this be a bookend. I want it to feel like if you hold these two books and you fold them together, certain things are going to meet up. So there will be points in the sequel whenever people read it where they're going to go, that's just like this. Yes, that's on purpose. And so in a way, I'm reverse outlining my process with book one to try to figure out how to get there with book two. And it's been enlightening, but also humbling to realize that even when you're like, yes, I did it, it's still just as hard to do it again.
Right.
You can't just snap your fingers and have it go and fall into place. So,
which is like a testament that beat sheets, you could have all the materials you want. You could have all the worksheets you want. A book could fall out of your brain perfectly. Yep. And if that happens to you, please tell me about it. Yeah. you are blessed by the gods. Just go on your life. But if it does fall out of your brain in a month, that's great. But don't expect that for the next one. Don't expect that for anything else.
That's why I laugh when people are like, oh, if you use beat sheets, you're just going to write something formulaic. And I'm like, I wish it was as simple
straight
as
up.
Following a recipe. But even when you know the formula, you still can't just.
That's where even when I get so mad because my family will do it every now and then where they'll be like, why don't you just write like another 50 Shades of Grey? And it's like, do not act like romance or erotica novels
even if you look at like
stop,
like romance novels have a stricter quote unquote formula than almost any other genre. And yet obviously there are bajillions of them and only some of them are household names. So just like there are magic ingredients. You can follow the formulas all day long. That is not what makes a book great. You often need to master that part to make your book great, but that's not like there is no magical formula for writing a perfect book because believe me, I have all the recipes and I still don't know how to bake the cake. So
It's true.
That's why it's an art. You can study the science all day long and you should. You should study the science.
For sure.
But it's still an art. And it's still a people,
right?
Even if they're fictional. So, yeah, you gotta. It's a tricky.
Kandinsky studied colors to paint. So, you gotta study your beat sheets there.
Yeah, study your beat sheets, study your psychology, study your people. But that's why, again, the best part is the more you put in your head, the more stuff you have to pull from. So,
it's true. That's why I like call it my toolbox. Right? Mm-hmm. It's like I have this in my toolbox and. I just have to remember the tools that are in my toolbox.
Yeah, no, that's why I'm like, I have a lot of stuff in my toolbox. It's just really disorganized in there, and I don't know which tool I need. I'm like trying to like screw the little screw in, but I'm using all the wrong screwdrivers, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then somehow I remember like, oh, you ding dong, you did this last time with this tool. And I'm like, I forgot that tool even existed. Yep. Sorry.
Story of my life. Yes. Correct. Yes. Me being like, how did I
feel it? Feel it. This turned into such a juicy episode. This is good.
Look at us go. Now can we recreate this with my book? That's what I need. I need someone to sit down and be like, hi, okay. All right, honey. Okay, let's look at your ingredients. Hold on. You know, like I need a chef to just plop down in my kitchen and be like, okay. What can we make with this? Like the TV shows where they give you the ingredients, but you have to make something else. I got the ingredients. Yeah. I just need a MasterChef to show up and be like, okay, no, 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 no. You're trying to make a cake and you're supposed to be making a pot pie. And I'm like, oh, okay. What? How do I do that? So, yeah. How do I recreate this for the actual book? This is my question.
I wish I could help. Maybe watch more fan-made videos on YouTube. That's all I got. Yeah. Maybe they'll help.
Yeah. It'll get there. It's okay. I think I'm closer than I think. I think I've had the
Yeah.
It's the dark. It's the dark night. I'm darkest momenting, which you're means there. That once it clicks, I'll be good. It's good.
Yes. And that's the thing, too, is like whenever I'm most frustrated with something like that, like when I get to that point where it's like I'm going to cry.
Yep.
I'm probably cried 12 times by now.
Yep. It's like that's where I am.
After that time where it's like it will – the moment I say I am never going to figure this out, I go to bed. And maybe I go to bed a couple nights.
Yeah.
But very soon after, I'm like, I figured it out. And then it starts happening. So
I think that it's kind of like we said with the more you know, the harder it gets. I think it's the same with the process. Like the more I do this, the more I'm like, I know there's a breakthrough moment that's going to happen. Could it happen today now, please? Right now, please? Right now, please? Right now, please? And like I'm at that point where I'm like, I know I can do this. Can't do it right now. I need a breakthrough. And then I feel like, you know, people that don't write would be like, well, just sit down and write every day. I'm like, I can write words all day long. I got more than enough words, guys. I need something to click, and I don't know how to make it click. And a lot of times you just have to wait. I say with terror.
That's my least favorite. Yes. That's my least favorite thing that I have paid attention to. This is the first time I've ever paid attention to it, where it's like, let's try, let's play, let's work on it. Oh. I'm hitting a wall. This isn't fun anymore.
Oh, I'm just banging against that wall. Just bang, 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 bang.
I guess I'll wait.
Yep.
I guess I'll wait.
That's where I am. So to any of you who are pre-ordering This Vicious Grace, I will do my best to get that sequel out exactly a year later. But if it's a little bit late, now you know why. Don't tell my agent I said that. It's going to be great. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's going to be publishing.
5 seconds later. Just pop it. Just like get one book. Timeline
issues second book or whatever.
Yeah.
Publishing production issues. That's what's happened to your
sequel. Well, honestly, that is kind of part of the thing is that there's less wiggle room for authors to get an extra month or two because there's like not enough paper in the world and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we can talk about that another day.
I was going to say, because we are getting to the point where we wrap up this episode where we end on a high note now.
Yes.
So we can't hit a low note and then hit a high note. We can't do that.
Nope. Emily's standing on the cliff. Yeah.
Yeah.
The cliff of the darkest moment. I was like, I'm like not going over it. I'm just going to.
No.
Yeah.
Let's turn that cliff into the cliff from Pride and Prejudice where she's staring out over the ocean or whatever.
Do love a dramatic cliff moment. It's
not the ocean. Oof. Oof.
That's all right.
That movie provided it. Emily,
yes,
be it writing related or not,
probably not.
What has been something or some things that have brought you joy this week?
I do have a writing related one, actually. It's not the process of writing, but I just got an invitation to my first authorly travel, go and do a thing as an author thing event. Yay! In April in North Carolina. And that's blowing my mind.
You didn't tell me
about
that?
It literally was like an hour ago. I was going to tell you, but then we started recording. It's in Winston-Salem, but yeah, I'm going to go and talk to some booksellers, and it sounds fun, and I'm just, I don't know, like I'm at that point where I'm like, oh, I can do that now? Like I can go, the people would actually want to hear what I say before my book comes out, so I'm just really excited about that. So,
that's exciting.
It is. And then I was planning to MapQuest to see how far you are from that, but I feel like everything's really far in North Carolina, so.
Hi, we live in the armpit of like North Carolina.
Because, friends, Anna has a dog named Duck, and the only part of North Carolina that I have been to is Duck, North Carolina, and I always assumed Anna had named her dog Duck after Duck, and then the first time I mentioned that I was in Duck, Anna was like, Duck what? So, yeah.
I was... Just North Carolina is a wide boy state. We are a wide boy state.
Big boy. Yeah, I will be in Winston-Salem in late April.
Be several hours.
Several exactly.
Several.
But I'm excited. But my first thought, this is such a writery thing to do, is like, oh, maybe I can take a train and then I'll have hours of writing time. Like, all right, way to go, self. Way to dream big. Just hours on a train. It, though. Yes. But what has brought you joy this week?
I think, honestly, it's been writing, working on this new project and just having fun with it. That's been fun. I have been slowly learning how to read again. I lost that ability once
that
again
happens.
After Pitch Wars. Yeah. Yep. Been reading Kat Corpy's The Machinists, which is
cool.
You ever hear of a book concept or a movie concept and you know you would never have the skill or know how to pull it off, but you're like almost mad you didn't?
Well, sort of. Yes. The one time I had an idea that I was like, I can't write this, I put it on Twitter and Lane Fargo wrote it. So I get the best of all worlds because I was like, that's my idea. My name's in the book, but I didn't have to do the work.
Right.
It's called They Never Learn. Like, check out They Never Learn. It is about a serial female professor, serial killer.
That's so good.
And I was like, this is not the book for me, but I know who can write it. So, yes.
Right. Cats is like a concept that I guess maybe it's not like I'm not mad. Like, I would never write it. Like, I would never think to write it.
It's just so good that you're like, yeah.
It's so good that I'm like, why has nobody done this before? And also, get this on a shelf right now.
Yeah.
It's one of those. So every time I open it, it brings me so much joy.
That's so cool.
So much joy.
I love seeing what brains can come up with. It's so fascinating.
Me too. That's been my favorite thing with Pitch Wars is going through and being like, where did that come from?
I know.
Where did you think of that? That's amazing.
We could do a whole episode of just like 5-minute clips of asking authors, like, where on earth did you come up with this? But I want like the real answers. You know, like you always ask them, they're like, well, I've always been curious. It's like, no. Like, what was that scene in that movie? What was that joke? What was that whatever? Like, what was the actual inspiration?
Love it. Well, this has been great.
This has been great. We did it. We did that thing. Yay. Getting our groove back on.
Yeah. I still don't know. How do we dismount from?
And then we put our hands up in the air. That was a jumping off the pommel horse. I don't know. Gymnastics. Olympics. Stick the landing. Bye.
We did it.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Basic Pitches. We super appreciate it. Remember, if you liked what you heard, go like and subscribe. Go follow us on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you can find your podcasts. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram. We love to hear from you. Another cool feature is if you go on Anchor, you can leave us a voice message, ask us a question, give it a shout out, whatever it is you want, and we'll try and put it on the show. See you next time. Bye, Pitches.